Welcome to the Public Words Project. This is coming up towards the end of Black History Month, and we are celebrating with a wonderful marathon session of interviews at the Museum of Social Justice here in Los Angeles along the historic Olvera Street. And I have already interviewed Reverend Gary Bernard Williams of United Methodist Church and also Pastor Adrian Zachary of Crossroads United Methodist Church. And now bringing up the rear is Mr. Keith Rice, who's a historian at the Tom and Ethel Bradley Center at California State University Northridge, which is kind of special to me because I'm at CSU LA, but we also have a connection that I just found out about, that we are Detroit natives. So welcome, Mr. Rice. So
thank you.
Yes, thank you. And so we just like to start out just super easy. If you can just tell us, you know, where you're from and just a little bit more about what you do, and we'll go from there.
Okay, I'm from Detroit. I came here in 1981. Oops. I came here to get in the music business.
Okay.
Actually, I was a guitar player and playing in local bands in Detroit and wanted to expand. So I moved out here, like I was telling you before, with $300 in my pocket.
Wow.
Because a friend had came home and even though I was a musician, you may not remember, you're too young, but around that time period, there was some organizations called Young Boys Incorporated. I don't know if you ever heard of them, but they were like major drug dealers all over the city.
It sounds kind of familiar. It's familiar. I look at my Detroit
YouTube
history.
It.
Yes, okay, I will.
And I was dating somebody who was affiliated with that, her family, and I was getting in trouble, just put it that. I had been in the military, came home, and it was just, you know, Linwood and Davison.
Yeah.
Linwood and Dexter.
Yep. It's that hood, that
it's
area.
The hood. It's where I grew up, you know. It's where my 95-year-old mother still lives to this day.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I needed to get away from Detroit. So I came out here. My friend said, you need to leave. 5 days later, I was on a U-Haul.
Wow.
Helping her move her stuff out here. And
My
girlfriend at the time was singing in Tennessee or something. I called her, told her, I'm out. If you want to come join me when you get back, you can. And she did eventually.
Yeah.
But yeah, I came out here to get in the music business, which I did, but I also was an electronic technician from the military. So I got a job with RCA.
Oh, wow. So you have a very, very diverse background.
It's a lot. Okay. Yeah, I'm a Gemini, so a lot of stuff.
Well, there you go. That explains a lot. Okay. Yes, sir.
Yes, so multitask.
Multi-talented. Awesome. I love it. So now, did you complete school out here when you were in California?
That's another story. Well, being in the military, I had the GI Bill.
Right.
So I did a little college in Detroit, but it just didn't lock in.
Okay.
So when I came out here and I started working for RCA / General Electric as a computer technician, I went back to college at West LA.
Okay.
But it was an ulterior motive for that because at the time, community college was free.
Right.
So my GI Bill money, I got to keep it.
Okay.
So I took it and I started a recording studio.
Awesome.
And started working with people. Eventually, I got to work with people on Earth, Wind, and Fire, The Temptations.
Cool.
I groups
love
like that.
I'm not too young to remember those.
Yeah,
folks.
Well, you
okay.
were doing that. So my dream kind of came true doing that.
So now, how did you get from music to being a historian?
So there was things in between that.
Mm-hmm.
In between repairing computers, I started working in post-production for Technicolor, doing audio. And I would also go on the road with one of the guys from Earth, Wind, and Fire. I ran his studio, but he also had a live band, and we toured all over the world.
Wow.
And I would always find myself in museums, just taking in the culture, whether it was Italy, Russia, whatever. And everybody else would be asleep or whatever, the band, and you know, I'd be out learning things. I thought about, I've been lucky, kind of like in a Forrest Gump way. I know when things about to play out, or I know if it's gonna get a little strange, and I get out, and so I went back to college. I took a Spanish class. That was the first thing I did. And I took a real estate one-day seminar at Pierce College. And I just felt really comfortable being in school.
Cool. So you just knew that that was the place for you.
Well, kind of.
Yeah.
Then I took one Spanish class. And then as I got deeper into Spanish, I just said, I need to finish my degree. And I had done like 2 years in mm-hmm. West LA mm-hmm. in the 80s. Mm-hmm. So it didn't take me much time mm-hmm. to finish at Pearson and transfer to CSUN. Mm-hmm. And it was always history. Even right. in the 80s, it was right. history classes mm-hmm. I was taking. So
what is it about history that you love so much? Like, what is it about history that attracts you to it?
Well, when I was touring in all those European places mm-hmm. and learning this history, mm-hmm. and then I come back and do some research, mm-hmm. I realized I didn't know anything about Black history mm-hmm. like I should have. Mm-hmm. So as I started taking classes at CSUN, mm-hmm. I had a teacher from Argentina, mm-hmm. and I had a Latin American class, mm-hmm. and that really interested me mm-hmm. about learning about Black people mm-hmm. in the United States, because we came to Brazil first right. on sugar plantations, mm-hmm. which
right.
probably 99% of the Black people in the United States don't know that.
Right.
Our go-to yeah. word is cotton. Mm-hmm. We came mm-hmm. here because of cotton. And mm-hmm. we came to the Western Hemisphere because right. of sugar. Mm. And it was like from that point on.
And rum. Yes, sugar.
Molasses, rum, all yeah. of that. Mm-hmm. Well, it was a big exchange of items and materials between. It's called Atlantic World History. Right. Europe, mm-hmm. Africa, mm-hmm. South America, and North America. Mm-hmm. So the byproduct of the sugar was the molasses, mm-hmm. and then they made the rum with the molasses, mm-hmm. and it was just an exchange.
Right.
But unfortunately, Black people suffered the most mm-hmm. after indigenous people on either on the entire Western Hemisphere. Mm-hmm. Indigenous people killed off from disease or decided mm-hmm. I'm just not gonna be a slave and disappear into the mountains. Mm-hmm. So we get these people who can't get back home
right.
from Africa yeah. and bring them here mm-hmm. and, you know, put them to work.
Right, right.
And that history just kind of gradually worked its way up mm-hmm. to America. Mm-hmm.
So
North
now,
America.
How, when you started to learn about that, not having known a lot of detail about this before, what did that do for you?
Piss me off.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, that sounds familiar. Yeah.
It still pisses me off.
Right.
I mean, mm-hmm. the brutality of sugar was really an eye opener
mm-hmm.
because mm-hmm. approximately 5 million slaves went to Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
And the lifespan of a slave on a sugar plantation was 7 years.
Wow.
You know, it's mm-hmm. like, it's like you buy a new tire for your car, you know right. it's going to last a certain amount of time.
Exactly.
Same thing with this human life.
Right.
People lost limbs in sugar production mm-hmm. because they had these crude machines.
Right.
For some reason, in my studies, it seemed mm-hmm. like women didn't reproduce either in that environment.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost like, I forgot the word for it, it's like they didn't want to bring children into that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So 5 million slaves came to Brazil. 2.5 million came to the Caribbean, only 500,000 came to the United States, but mm-hmm. we reproduced. I mm-hmm. don't know if it's better,
right?
Because now out of that 500,000, mm-hmm. like 40 million of us.
A lot, whole yeah. lot, right? Whole lot. Yep, absolutely. So you say that it definitely pissed you off, which is completely understandable, yeah. right? But how did you maintain to stay the course and learning about Black history, and not just learning about it, but being in the academic environment and then having the opportunity to teach it, you know, because when we learn about our own history, it's not just an intellectual exercise, right? Like, we are learning about things that have happened to us, right? And mm-hmm. we see patterns of things happening again, mm-hmm. over and over and over again, just in a different context. It just gets remixed, right? And so how do you stay the course with being on that pathway of learning about history, but not just learning about it, but embracing it, but also using it as a tool for change?
Well, sharing the knowledge is the tool for change, mm-hmm. because a lot of Black people don't know this, and a lot of other groups don't know about the history of African Americans or mm-hmm. Africans mm-hmm. on this continent.
Mm-hmm.
But I embrace, one thing I started doing after Professor Juarez Dape introduced me to these things is I embrace slavery. Because
mm.
most people are embarrassed about slavery,
right.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
Most people, you know, and we haven't been taught to mm-hmm. be prideful of slavery mm-hmm. or anything that we accomplished out of slavery.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like, oh, they're the descendants of slaves.
Right.
Now knowing that history, how these people survived that,
right.
how they endured
mm-hmm.
some of the brutality, it's hard to take right. that. You know, when you hear about, so a slave owner gets into debt, you know, mm-hmm. whatever, gambling, whatever his problem right. may be. Mm-hmm. He's got these slaves, just like you and I have cars. If exactly. I get broke, I'm going to have to sell my car, right?
Right, exactly.
They get broke, I'm going to have to sell my slave. Mm-hmm. But these mm-hmm. are people, and, right. and these people have children. Mm-hmm. So when I read about women being half naked on an auctioning block mm-hmm. and the kids trying to, you know, stay with them and them right. separating them. Mm-hmm. And I was reading something the other day where they were trying to take the mother and the kid and separate them, and all of the slaves just started doing something like praying. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. it kind of scared the slave owners and the people mm-hmm. who were wrangling them or whatever the mm-hmm. word is. And they got scared, and that made the white people even more, mm. you know, brutal, and mm. just, you know, start beating them to make them get in order, because right. they were being separated, going to ox carts and things mm-hmm. like that. But slavery is the one thing that I'm like really most proud of, because mm-hmm. it fueled the Industrial Revolution, because mm-hmm. at least for the case of Great Britain. Mm-hmm. I think it was Barbados mm-hmm. is the sugar island that they own. Mm-hmm. They didn't like the climate, so they didn't want to live there. Mm-hmm. So all the money that was generated there came back to England, mm-hmm. which helped steam engine fuel all of this technology, which right. I personally think we benefit from today. I don't think you would have a computer right. revolution without an right. industrial revolution, mm-hmm. which you didn't have mm-hmm. without sugar, because sugar, I tell people, was like cocaine mm-hmm. to those people, because yeah. before that they used honey and mm-hmm. things like that to mm-hmm. sweeten. Mm-hmm. But when they were introduced to sugar, it was on.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. And so what I like what you just talked about is this progression, you know, throughout history, and how things kind of build on top of each other. Mm-hmm. And so you have some people, though, who feel that history is just something in the past, like slavery is just something in the past, right? So you hear the rhetoric of, well, why should you be worried about slavery, right? Like, y'all are fine now, you know, slavery has ended, right? That was something historical in the past. So what do you say to people about understanding the importance of Black history, taking us from slavery to where we are today?
Well, you can use the example of, you know, police shootings, mm-hmm. because back in the past, it was the slave owner's sons who would go out and you know, run down the slaves mm-hmm. and get them and recapture them, mm-hmm. any runaway slaves, and eventually and law was a part of that,
using
the law
that,
to do it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They could return you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when a Black man is running away from a police officer and people mm-hmm. are going, well, why are they doing that? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. Why don't they just stop and stand still and, right. and you know, obey the law? Mm-hmm. Well, number one, they might have some trouble.
Right.
I mean, you know, let's be honest.
Right.
You might have some minor trouble, like late on child support, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to try and get out of there.
Right.
Do you deserve to be shot in the back? I'm not pointing a weapon at you right. or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm 61 years old. And I still feel that way when I'm around certain police officers
right, right.
or it's too many of them.
Yeah.
It's like, or I go to campus, like I go to my office at 3:00 in the morning sometimes because it was raining like crazy. And I was like, oh, the roof might be leaking, and I couldn't sleep. So I went, but I'm thinking, you know, if officers see me walking
right.
around, you know, or see the silhouette in the office, I don't right. know if they're going to shoot first. And I have 3 Black sons.
Wow.
So I'm always thinking about,
right, exactly.
you know, and teaching them about how to deal with police officers.
Right.
Did I answer your question, or did I go way off?
No. It's okay. I mean, it's okay, because you are alluding to how the past shows up in the present, and how we can't forget the past and how things build up, and that history is not just situated in events. You know, it's things that are passed down. Like, so it's not just about learning about history from school books, you know, but we learn about history through passing on our experiences through our generations, like through kids, right?
Right.
So understanding that you as a father, you have history that you need to pass down, you know, to
right.
your sons, right? Because we live in a certain system and a context that perpetuates these things throughout history, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you did. So thank you.
All right.
Appreciate that. So what does Black History in particular, Black History Month, what does that mean to you specifically?
Honestly, nothing.
Okay.
Nothing really,
mm-hmm.
because it's 365 for me.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, I do but Black History Month. I do in Black History Month what I do every day in my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just trying to share the information I'm learning. That's what education is about to me.
Right.
You know, originally it might have been a little bit of an ego thing. I want to be a brainiac or something. But and once again, this is Professor Patricia Juarez Dalpe, you know, made me realize, and any other professors at CSUN, it's like the reason you get this knowledge is to share with other people. It's not for you to keep to yourself and just walk around with it, you know, making your ego feel better.
Right.
It's to share it. And that's what I do every day, every minute of my life. Mm-hmm. And not just Black history, any history that I learn, I share, you know?
So how would you, let me think about this question. Because you have had enough experience to see changes in generations, right, of Black folks, right? And so...
Wow, I'm that old now. I'm that old. I'm that guy that now I've seen things change. And like I said, my mother's 95, and I still talk to her, who's seen things change since before World War II.
Right,
now,
exactly.
I'm that person.
Yeah.
To someone who was born, who was 2 years old when I moved to California.
So, what are some of the most significant changes that you've seen across generations among Black folks when it comes to knowing history, embracing history, doing better by history?
Ooh, that's a tough one. That's a tough one. I don't know. I mean, I really can't tell you. I think I could probably tell you better if I'd always been a historian.
Okay.
But since I'm pretty new to this field for the last 10 years or so, I think younger people are becoming more interested in it because it's so much information available.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether they choose to access it is one thing, but you can, this is what I think. I think it's more available, and that's what I try and do. Because of my background of being in technology and being in music, like me and a professor produced a documentary on racial restrictive covenants. And we tie that into gentrification. That was the whole premise of doing the documentary, because now Black people and other people of color are seeing, hey, these white people are moving back in and, you know, displacing us because we can't afford to live in those neighborhoods. And young Black people see this because why they can't, you know, they can't rent places like I could rent when I first got here. My apartment was $300 in 1981. It's like $1,300, $1,400.
Right.
So I use that documentary or visual things to show them, okay, this isn't new.
Right.
It was just different. You had racial restrictive covenants. You couldn't live here, or the law could enforce, you know, you not being able to live in a house. They could call the law and say they shouldn't be here, kick them out. So, and I use music, you know, a lot of times when you do older topics, people tend to use old dry music.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So with young people, I have someone young do the music, so it's the beat captures them before a word is spoken. And then they're more likely to listen. But all this is so much easier to do nowadays than 20 years ago. You have to go to the studio and all this stuff, but you can do it with, you know, Adobe Premiere and Pro Tools, and put it all together in a laptop and do a production. And I think accessibility is what has changed. And I think definitely younger people, they probably know more about Black history than I did at that age. Because it's so easy. And there's so much going on. If something happens in Black Lives Matter, if they look that
it's
up, then it could take
seen.
Them somewhere else,
yeah,
take them somewhere else.
It's immediately seen. So they have the power of technology. It can change the game when it comes to history, but, you know, social justice movements and things of that nature. So is there a specialty that you have in Black history when it comes to certain topics and certain areas?
Well, I'm kind of a specialist, along with my colleague Dr. Karen Stanford, on doing Black Power, the Black Power movement in Los Angeles. We've been interviewing members of the Black Panther Party, the US organization, of the Nation of Islam, who were all activists at that time, but also you can't really discuss or examine that particular mm-hmm. topic if you don't look at, they call them social clubs, some people call them gangs, yeah. that came before mm-hmm. Crips and Bloods, which mm-hmm. are like the Slawsons, the businessmen, mm-hmm. who else, the Gladiators. Mm-hmm. Some of them became members of the movement. Mm-hmm. You know, they were young, mm-hmm. they were motivated by the killings going on in the South.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my area right now, because mm-hmm. I'm working on my dissertation is going to be about that.
Congrats.
So
awesome.
That's what I'm kind of focused on, okay. along with the Civil Rights Movement mm-hmm. too. So really what I look at is probably 1860 mm-hmm. or a little before that, mm-hmm. abolitionism mm-hmm. to Black power.
Got it. Kind so what are some of the misconceptions that people have about the Black power movement, and how would you address those misconceptions?
Well, first of all, that it was, and probably what I'll tell you is based mm-hmm. on people I've interviewed.
Okay.
And some of them said, well, it's not a part of the civil rights movement, mm-hmm. especially in LA. Mm-hmm. LA is, and that's where I'm kind of focusing on mm-hmm. LA, but LA is influenced by everybody else.
Right.
LA is influenced by Malcolm X heavily. Mm-hmm. Malcolm X is influenced by Robert Williams. Mm-hmm. Other people are influenced by the Communist Party mm-hmm. of the 20th, early 1920s, 1930s, mm-hmm. because Black people used the Communist Party to get paid.
Mm-hmm.
It really wasn't about the politics and all that. It's like they're trying to come down south to help mm-hmm. us get jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that kind of leads to the Black power mm-hmm. Movement. But I'm really focused in LA. Mm-hmm. And some of the misconception is that it was really an Oakland-based movement.
Okay.
People don't realize how important some of the members of the Black Power Movement are, that they came from L.A.
Mm.
Like Eldridge Cleaver was from L.A.
Oh, yep.
Another, the founder of the Southern California Chapter Black Panther Party, his name was Bunchy Carter from L.A.
Mm-hmm.
We also talked to people from the prison movement
mm-hmm.
and some people we interviewed who were in prison at the time of Watts
mm-hmm.
Rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
All of them thought that was going to happen in Oakland because okay. they didn't think L.A. was that, for lack of a better word, hardcore.
Oh, really? Oh,
really?
Wow, okay.
I mean, because all the activity you thought was Oakland.
Yeah.
You know, the Panthers up there,
mm-hmm.
They had an artist movement up there.
Mm-hmm.
It was all central to there, but
mm-hmm.
they were kind of taken aback when this mm-hmm. jumped off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the history here, police brutality was
right.
really severe. And you mm-hmm. talked to them, you know, them guys, they were younger, it was
mm-hmm.
like, you know, we used to get brutalized all the time,
mm.
and we just wasn't taking it anymore.
Right. So now why is that geographical distinction really important?
Because I think propaganda, but the news and the topics that historians tend to follow
yeah.
is always Oakland-based. And
mm-hmm.
I think people need to know, because L.A. is like this outpost to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, coming from Detroit, you got New York,
yeah.
you got Detroit, you got
yeah.
Chicago,
mm-hmm.
and you jump way over here and here's L.A. by itself.
Right.
You know, so I even remember growing up, you know, not even growing up, how I would know people out here
mm-hmm.
and L.A. would get music later than we would get it.
Mm.
Because it would go all through this Chitlin circuit to see
circuit.
If it would
yeah,
work.
The Chitlin circuit,
you know, if
yes.
it was good.
Yeah.
And by the time it's been proven back east and the south and everywhere,
right.
then it comes to L.A.
Mm-hmm.
But growing up in L.A. and Detroit, I thought L.A. must be Soul Train. They on top of everything. But it wasn't because
right.
it's like this island over here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, honestly, for us, between Chicago and L.A., it's white folks.
Mm.
There's not a lot of Black folks.
Mm.
So, did I answer that question?
They need
to know that
yeah,
LA was
right.
part of the Civil Rights movement, as well
right.
as the Black Power movement.
Yeah.
And I tell people this all the time.
Mm.
We have tons of photos of Dr. King being in LA, and they're like, why is he coming in?
That's not known.
He was here all the time.
Yeah.
Raising money.
Right. And that's rarely seen,
right.
you know, and part of like the mainstream history of MLK. So
right.
absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, you got all these Hollywood stars out here making all this bank.
Mm-hmm.
So where are you going to go?
Solid point. Solid right. point. Absolutely. So what role do you think, you talked a lot about music.
Mm-hmm.
So what role do you think music is going to play in the future of Black movements, civil rights movements moving forward?
I don't know. I think it could play a role.
Yeah.
I don't know if, I don't, I don't know if it is, you know, because now I'm an elder. And I have to refer to my granddaughter, who's 10 years old. So who's that playing? Who's that? And luckily, my 18-year-old, he listens to stuff I listen to. Mm-hmm. I used to take him. He's seen Prince. He's seen Smokey Robinson. He's seen James Brown die too soon. He's seen Charlie Wilson. Mm-hmm. So he likes really old school stuff. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the new school stuff is based on the old school stuff. Mm-hmm. What I'm getting at is, like yesterday, there was an event at CSUN, and they brought a bunch of high school students in, mm-hmm. like 10th and 11th graders. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they had a speaker set up and music. Mm-hmm. And when they hit the music, I didn't know any of these songs. The kids, as soon as they hear the first beat, they were rushing to the stage to dance. So I think if you give the right message, mm-hmm. you know, I think music could play a powerful part. Like, I was really into hip hop mm-hmm. from Run DMC, Curtis Blow, mm-hmm. on up until, I say, even up until NWA. I was into NWA as well. Mm-hmm. Then I kind of fell off. But like X-Clan and Public Enemy, yeah. and Tribe Called Quest, all those early, yes. 90 groups,
yeah, yep.
They had a message.
They're
and
my favorites.
I think that, oh, okay. Yes. I think that could all come back. Mm-hmm. Some of this music, you know, is, and this is gonna make me sound old, it's disgusting. You know, yeah, it's, yeah. like, mm-hmm. when I was growing up, you listen to Richard Pryor records or right. Rudy Ray Moore records, mm-hmm. and that was like disgusting stuff, but it was cool, you know, it was a record for that. Mm-hmm. It didn't have music behind it. Mm-hmm. But now when you, I don't know what the purpose is of some of this mm-hmm. music. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. I don't know.
Well, no, that's, and I'm glad you brought that word up, purpose. You know, that's a key core word, especially when we talk about the upliftment of Black folks. And so, and I've asked this to all of the interviewees, I should say, what would be your ideal vision of a thriving Black community?
Wow.
That's one of your good questions.
My idea of being a thriving Black community. You know what? Mm-hmm. You and I, we come from a predominantly Black city.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So that looks a little different. Mm-hmm. So when you say community, mm-hmm. people most often think that's a group of people all living together in the
right.
same area.
Right.
And what I'm finding out here, mm-hmm. people have dispersed. Mm-hmm. The Black community isn't what it was, like when these people I interviewed tell me about it. Mm-hmm. But it is a community because they come together in certain spaces, like
right.
Leimert Park,
yeah.
the African American
right.
Museum, mm-hmm. that are still associated with the community. Mm-hmm. And a thriving community, honestly, hey, I'm a capitalist.
Okay.
This community has got some money.
Okay.
It's
yeah.
got
yeah.
the power.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to occupy any particular space.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Black community here does thrive.
Mm-hmm.
I know some really powerful people.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
mm-hmm.
it's what makes it a community mm-hmm. if they help each other.
Right.
You know,
right.
And that's an issue here.
Yeah.
And not just in the Black community. Mm-hmm. I'm like, the homeless situation is mm-hmm. atrocious to me,
yeah.
which mostly affects minorities.
Right.
That mm-hmm. that's part of that's a community that's not thriving,
mm-hmm.
and we are part of that.
Right.
I think Black people gonna what's the word you used again? Thrive.
Right.
Whatever. Yeah. Wherever we are.
Right.
You know, because mm-hmm. we had to.
Yeah,
and
we
still have to.
So
yeah,
we made it.
We didn't have nothing. We got
right.
the scraps from the master. Mm-hmm. We raised his kids.
Mm-hmm.
We did everything.
Mm-hmm.
They tried to kill us, and we're still here. So
right.
we never stopped thriving.
Solid point. So what do you think that we need to do moving forward as Black folks? Right. So it's great if we have individuals who in their own right are powerful. But like you said, it's not community until we help each other.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so, like, I think about Black Wall Street,
mm-hmm.
you know, places like that where you had a physical geographic place where you had Black folks who had their own businesses and everything else. And it was a collective, you know. So do you think that we can get back to that? Should we go back to that? Or what are your thoughts?
The the conditions for that don't exist right now.
Okay.
And I mean, they do exist if you take notice and you are aware of what's going around and you take some of these history professors that I had the pleasure of learning under.
Mm-hmm.
But some people think civil rights was not the greatest thing for black
people. Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
You know, it destroyed communities economically because now you can go in these places that you weren't welcome in before.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the white man woke up and said, hey, green dollars, green dollars. I don't care where they come from.
Right.
And that impacted, you know, black mom and pop stores and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we can ever get back to that. But I know one road is it's a different way now.
Mm-hmm.
It's like technology is a road to get there.
Yeah.
So young black people being in STEM programs is important because from what I see on CSUN, they're not all that welcome in STEM programs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a key to in education, you know?
Right.
Street education is one thing.
Right.
And it can get you, I mean, you can become wealthy from that. But, you know, I believe that the powers that be always knows who's doing the gangster stuff.
Mm.
And when they get done, if you're tired of you being a gangster or the flavor of the month, they're going to get somebody else. You're going to go to jail.
Yeah.
You're going to get involved in the system.
Mm.
They're going to take all whatever money you made is going to go back into the system and back into them. Then they'll promote the next person.
Mm.
So a combination of street savvy and education.
Because
when I went back to college and I'd be sitting up in these classes and I'd be saying, wow, all you gotta do is what they tell you to do. And I knew some guys that used to hang out on Linwood and Grand that were brilliant.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Street level brilliant.
Absolutely.
And I'm saying they were dead by that time,
right,
but they could have been in these classes because it was a game, really.
Yeah.
Education is a game to me.
Mm.
You know, you play the game, you get what you can get out of it, but in the end, you help people.
Right.
So,
solid point.
Education is the key to me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I knew guys who could run corporations.
Oh, there's brilliance in the street. There's absolute brilliance, right? It's just a matter of directing it in a certain place, you know?
Right.
So it's not a question of, are there people who are smart enough? You know, there are plenty of people who are smart enough, right? It's just, are they in the right place to cultivate that in a different way?
Right,
to
environment.
To leverage it in a different way, right?
Yeah.
So, absolutely. So, knowing what you know now, being an elder, right? But knowing as much as you know, not just about yourself, but about Black history, period, what advice would you give yourself as a kid?
Maybe listen to my father a little sooner might have been my advice because he had like a third or fourth grade education.
Mm-hmm.
He worked at Chrysler.
So did my grandpa.
Really?
Yeah,
which Chrysler?
Yeah, it was the factory.
In the city or out in the?
It was like on the outskirts.
Trenton?
Maybe that was it.
My father worked at Trenton Engine Plant.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, every time I go home, which I do like twice a year,
mm-hmm.
I just drive out there and look at it.
Man, wow.
Because that's how my family survived.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I think I would have listened to him a little bit sooner.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I didn't, because he taught me all the wisdom I needed to know to be out in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And my older brother, who was stabbed and killed on Linwood and Grand.
Wow.
That's another story.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. What was the question again? What would I have done different?
Or what advice would you have given yourself as a kid, knowing what you know now?
The one thing I tell my kids is I would have went straight to college.
Mm-hmm.
I went to college.
Yeah.
And was goofing off out at OCC.
Mm-hmm.
And my father's like, I'm not paying for this if you're goofing off.
Right.
And he was right.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably one thing but then you know what? I might not be where I am now.
Right.
I might have went into something I did not like.
Right.
You know, avoided the music, which I loved, maybe never traveled, maybe never, other than the military, but never did. No, I don't think I would give myself anything any different.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe go to school,
yeah.
Take that a little bit more serious, but no, I think I'm cool.
Yeah, I mean, everything happens for a reason, right? So yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. Well, with that, I just want to say thank you so much. We appreciate you coming, and we hope to have you back again. And if you want to talk about your dissertation, we can always do that too.
Oh, no problem.
So, yeah.
Okay.
So, all right, so thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Parker.
Oh, just Marla. It's fine.
I'll right. give props. Cool.
Right? All right.
I'm going through that right now. My qualifying exams are in 2 weeks. Well, so awesome. I give...